Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series created by Robert Jordan.
At its conclusion, the series will consist of 14 novels and one prequel novel.
Sadly, Robert Jordan did not live to see his work complete.
Brandon Sanderson, appointed by Mr. Jordan's widow, Harriet Rigney, will complete the series with the novels The Gathering Storm, Towers of Midnight, and A Memory of Light, based on the notes left by Mr. Jordan.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is The Wheel of Time. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 69 of the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com. I, of course, am Andrew Gellos, and with us this week is Virginia.
Hi, Andrew. It's great to be here, and also we're welcoming back Spencer. Hey there, Spencer.
Hi, everyone. How you doing?
So this week we're going to be continuing our listener voicemails. But before we do that, it should be noted that in our last podcast, we mentioned the update from the Dabble Brothers. Shortly thereafter, I went into the forums and asked that if Jason, our host at DragonMount.com, were able to speak to the Dabbles again at any point in time, if they could be asked the status of issues 7 and 8 of the New Spring comic, as the information in the article really didn't speak to those people who actually had a subscription and who haven't received the particular issues yet. About 6 days later, yesterday, as we are recording this, I actually received an email from the Dabble Brothers, and it says, "Hi all, if you are getting this email, it is because you have a New Spring subscription. As of today, issues 6 and 7 have been printed, but only issue 6 has been shipped. We had hundreds of copies of issue number 6 returned for undeliverable addresses. Because of this, we held off on sending out issue 7. Also during this time, we were in the process of partnering up with a new distributor, and this caused additional delays in resending issue 6 and sending issue 7. My email today is to assure all of you that your subscriptions are still intact and will resume this spring, with issue 7 and 8 being shipped out together, and issue 6 for those of you who did not receive your initial copy. Please reply back to this email, which is info@dabblebrothers.com, with your updated address if you did not receive issue 6, or if it has changed since receiving issue 6. If you have any additional questions, please email lesdabble@dabblebrothers.com. Thanks.
Wow, that's good news for you. You've been waiting anxiously for those issues, I know.
Yeah, I was very happy about this because it felt like one of those things. I'm not saying that my post on the forum got this done, but it felt that way, and it was just kind of exciting that, you know, for once there was a question that got asked and the answer actually arrived in a timely fashion from anyone. I mean, I've encountered this problem all over the place, and so it was just one of those really, really nice things. And I also figured, on top of physical addresses changing, I know I have dozens of friends who had, you know, two or three different email addresses at one point in time, and then they disappeared. And I figured if there was anyone in the listening audience who had not received their issues, but maybe their email address had changed and therefore wouldn't have received this email, it's also another way of getting that information out so that those people who paid for their subscriptions can actually get the product they paid for.
So which issue did you not get? 6 was the one that you started not getting?
I did actually receive issue 6. It was a little later than they had projected, but, you know, these things happen. As, you know, we know with the podcast, sometimes we've got plans to have so much stuff out, and sometimes it just isn't feasible or something comes up and we just, you know, don't get to it when we plan on it. What was upsetting about it was that after issue 6, there was, okay, we've got issue 6, you know, coming out to you. A month later, you're going to get 7, and a month later, you're going to get 8. And a month later, 7 didn't show up, and I emailed and didn't get any responses. And then 2 months went by, and then 3 months went by, and nobody that I could see in any of the forums had been getting any responses to any emails or any questions anywhere. And so it was one of those things where a lot of people were just wondering, am I ever actually going to get my finished product? And then, of course, I was thoroughly shocked when home over Christmas break, I walked into a local comic store and saw issue 7 sitting there. And I was thinking, well, how did the store get it and me not? And now I at least have an answer, is that, you know, for people with subscriptions, they didn't ship them out because there were address problems and other mitigating circumstances. So it is good to just have answers.
Well, it seems to me that having been in the magazine business before, the appropriate thing for them to do was to call the undeliverable addresses from their database and go ahead and ship to those people whose addresses did not bounce back. And then you would have had them originally. I suspect, and I don't know this, but usually the reason that something like that doesn't happen is because there's a lack of money, because shipping is not cheap. And it sounds to me like they said something about they just had something printed. Maybe that was issue 6. I don't know. But I don't know. I'm not trying to impugn the Dabble Brothers in that respect, but that really isn't an appropriate response to getting hundreds of issues back. They didn't get hundreds of issues back as undeliverable, and those could certainly have been shipped out, in my opinion. Even if they went to bulk mail to do it, you would have got it at least in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't know all that is going on. From what some sources within the various comic shops that I will occasionally drop into seem to say, was that there were some, you know, various contract ties that were going back and forth that were causing little disruptions here and there. And like I said, I don't really know, but I do know that progress on the issues of Eye of the World are continuing. There's actually an update to the news article that Jason originally posted that does now actually have some preview images of issue 2 of Eye of the World up as well, including, I am fairly certain about this, some conceptual art sketches of what Narg looks like.
Narg! Our friend Narg. Well, that'll be interesting to see.
I definitely think that for Eye of the World, I am going to actually hold off until they have all of them as a solid collected graphic novel before I purchase it, though.
Are they planning to do that? You sure they won't just run out of some issues and then you won't be able to get them at all?
No, it's always been a plan to collect The Eye of the World as a single graphic novel once the issues were done. While I like having the individual issues of New Spring, I think if I had it in a single collected volume, it would be just a little nicer because I've got all of this space and I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, now I've got to worry about, in the future, 8 separate little issues that I have to keep in a decent enough condition that if I want to look at them, they aren't going to be, you know, crumbling into dust in my hands.
True. Well, at least some progress is being made. That's a good sign. And I do recall, I think about a month ago, Brandon Sanderson posted something on his Facebook page about the merger, whatever it was that was happening with them, and he said it would be a good thing. So he must have been right.
Yeah, definitely. So that, of course, if you at all have anything to do with the New Spring comic, was what you should know. And now I believe we can move on to our primary topic, which was continuing our listener voicemails from last time.
What is with all this racket?
It's a spoiler warning, my lord. Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is vast and quite large, and there may be listeners that have not yet completed the series.
Are you saying that I have?
Of course not. My lord is wise and all-knowing. But if there were people listening that have not yet finished the Wheel of Time series, they would be advised to stop now or risk the chance of spoiling parts of the series they have not read.
Ah, I see. Well, do remember, I have a bit of business to take care of on the other side of...
Of course! My lord will do as he must. I will stand guard.
So we left off last week with Omar's email, which was feedback on episode 56. We did not get all the way through discussing all the various things that he had to say. So I feel it's only appropriate that we begin again with what we left off with last time. So here again, if you happened to miss it, or if in case you don't remember, is Omar.
Hi, this is Omar. I'm just finishing up listening to a most recent podcast about the ramifications of Chandler's after Tom and Gaiden. And a couple things I thought I'd mention. The Ulthrods, one of the Forsaken one time commented that they are binding themselves with the rods as if they were convicted criminals. So I would assume that in the case of Semirog and whatnot, that may be one of the best ways to do it, to actually use the Ulthrod as was intended and bind any Forsaken that survived as if they were criminals. Two, I don't, as far as cleansing or breaking the ties of the Dark Ones, it seems like, at least in the case of several of them, it's a conscious decision. So they would have to do so themselves. They would have to, I guess, in essence, repent. And human nature with country religions is, you know, that's the choice of the individual. So that's not altogether impossible. I do agree that the Black Cord was a method of protection of the men to the source. That's what Modian did converse grand about. And then one other thing I was going to bring up is concerning Mieren, or Lantir. She was, of course, a scientist, and she was she drilled the hole into the board looking for the source that both men and women could tap into. I've always thought that is what drove her past the edge. She was always, I always suspect she's a little obsessed with grief over Luz Theron marrying someone else, falling in love with someone else, and I think that drove her over the edge, and that obsession with him is definitely what the Dark One's able to latch onto and get into her. I think possibly maybe since Morden has her Corsuva, if they do the merger of their souls somehow, that would mean essentially that Rand or Luz Theron has her Corsuva, and possibly that may give her a bit of the closure that she would essentially be as close to him as she could get. That would bring her to change sides, because she would essentially have what she wants. She would be Rand's, and in her very sick way of looking at things, possibly he hers, but that's off the deep end there. Regarding the one of you had thoughts about maybe Loghain becoming the Tamerlan, and maybe being in joint with the Amerlin and whatnot. One thing I did find interesting, I thought this for years, is they have the vision of the Dragon Reborn kneeling before the Amerlin. Well, keep in mind that to get raised to the Amerlin, Egwene had to go through the most extreme of the ritual, where she had to wash the feet and kneel before the head of the other Aja. Well, I just thought that by following the same ritual, Rand would have to do, or the Dragon Reborn, essentially, would do the exact same ritual to arise to the Tamerlan seat, which Egwene, by fostering that, would be the greatest Tamerlan who ever lived, by restoring and merging the male and female channelers back into the Aes Sedai, the servants of all. That being said, that wouldn't necessarily, that while she wants it to be all channelers, I don't think it actually will include all channelers. I think there may be some ties and some agreements and alliances, but I don't think one house to rule them all, as far as that, will ever happen again. Yeah, I just thought I'd leave some thoughts while I'm driving around town. Bye.
All right, we talked about Rand kneeling. We did talk about
switching sides. We talked a little bit about the using the oath rod to bind any of the Forsaken survivors, should there happen to be any. And we kind of touched on Rand using Loredan's link with him to affect the Khorasuvra to turn Lanfear back over to the light, which, incidentally, I think we talked more or less about that and more about whether or not it's possible for someone to be forcibly turned from the Dark One to the light, or if it actually has to be a conscious choice type thing.
We did talk about the conscious choice. I don't recall that we included Lanfear in that, because he talked about it at a different point. Did we talk about the Oath Rods here, or back when I thought they had something to do with the Nine Rods of Dominion?
I'm fairly certain that we talked a little bit about it already. I honestly happen to agree that if any of the Forsaken do survive, they essentially are war criminals, and therefore the Oath Rods should be used, provided any of them are left, to rebind the Forsaken as the criminals that they would be.
Don't think they would just opt for execution?
They might, but I think it might be so recent after the Dark One was defeated that would you really want to take that chance? That, you know, for some reason, we're going to kill them because now that the Dark One's gone, there's definitely no way they're coming back.
Well, I don't know. I personally don't think that there's enough Forsaken left, that there's going to be any left over at the end of the last battle. Although it might be interesting if Demandred suddenly has a change of heart. I don't see it becoming an issue.
Demandred having a change of heart, oh yeah, that'll happen. About the same time that Rand Althor kneels before Demandred. I'm not going to put any money on that one, sorry. Would you trust him even if he did? I don't think I would.
He would have to prove it somehow, and I don't know how he could prove it.
I just wonder if maybe whatever character he is, which Robert Jordan said we have not yet met, whoever he's masquerading as, you know, perhaps if he did have a change of heart, he could use that character to just ingratiate himself with the hopefully winning side and make the change that way. But otherwise, I think if Rand, well, I don't know. Now that Lucerin isn't ranting in the back of his head, perhaps Rand would show compassion to one of the Forsaken if they decided to come back to the light. That's an interesting question. I would have said no possible way before his epiphany on Dragonmount, but that may have changed.
I gotta be perfectly honest, I think it's gonna happen sometime. And of the original 13, my math could be way off here, but there's 6 left, and two of them are bound to Morden, absolutely not. Those two, Syndane and Mon-Kheedon, there's no way. Halima, Erengar, I don't see it happening. I assume Grendel's dead, we know Semrog's dead, so that leaves Mesaana and Demondred, and I don't see Mesaana doing it either. She seems too much of a sniveling wimp. She might, I changed sides, save my life. But if one of the Forsaken was to actually have a fundamental change of character, it would have to be Demondred. And I just want to see it happen.
Well, I'm going to throw my 2 cents worth in and have a thought that I've just had, because I've always been of the opinion that, not always, but in recent books, I've been of the opinion that there's going to be a merger with Rand and Lucerin, which has sort of already happened. Either he's gone away or they've merged or whatever has happened, but he's not an issue anymore. And so there's still the issue that Min saw of two of them merged together and one lives and one doesn't. And I actually think that that's Morden, and I think the easiest way for that to happen would be for Morden to turn to the light side. And I could see it actually with him probably easier than anybody, maybe even Lanfear, because for 2 reasons. One, it's been remarked so many times that in a lot of ways he's very much like Rand. 2, his personal point of view, he thinks several times that it's really easy to win when you're playing both sides. And 3, if it has happened, according to him in history, that the champion of the light has been turned and made the Dark One's own, then it certainly stands to reason that it can happen the other way around.
Definitely an interesting concept. Again, you know, it's kind of all speculatory at this stage. I don't know if we're going to see a turn or not, but I do also see Morden being a possibility as a turning point, mainly because he's got that weird background in philosophy. Yeah, out of all the Forsaken, it was really weird that he didn't have, even in like Asmodian's case and Mesaana's case, regardless of how petty, their reasons for going over to the Dark One, you know, were at least something concrete. And in The Gathering Storm, they mentioned that, you know, Morden possibly turned just because he figured sooner or later the Dark One's going to win anyway. And it was kind of just almost a theoretical debate with himself, the grounds of philosophy, that eventually entropy must win out at some point. So why not side with it to begin with and save yourself the hassle of fighting against it until it does eventually take over?
Well, see, I've never really understood that whole philosophy anyway, because if the Dark One really is the embodiment of entropy, as you say, and I used to name all my cars entropy, by the way, because they were always approaching maximum entropy. But it seems that the goal of the Dark One was to blind the eye of the world and kill the great serpent of time and so forth. And in which case, what is the point of siding with somebody whose ultimate goal is for everything to not be? I don't get it. What possible benefit could that be to even the most philosophical of people, unless they were just a complete nihilist, which they didn't have in Randland. But
true, but I mean, on the other hand, it can also be argued that while he was, you know, possibly brilliant philosopher, Ishamael from the beginning always seemed to be just a little bit more insane than everyone else. You know, I don't think it had anything to do with the Dark One's influence over, you know, him or the taint on the source or even possibly using the true power. I just kind of think that the man was off to begin with somewhat, and, you know, his research took him into areas that put him still further off.
A complete philosophical nutjob who's been recycled unknown number of times. Wow, the perfect minion!
Well, you know, like all good intermediate minions, you know, all of his sub-minions don't attack at the same time in that. They dance around one at a time until they all fall off and they're beaten.
And I forgot, actually, point number four, too. Now Rand and Morden apparently have this physical or psychic connection, which apparently has happened due to the crossing of their Balefire streams in Shadar Logoth, going back to my previous theory. Here's an interesting thing. If that affected Rand so badly, why didn't it affect Morden? I've often wondered if that was the cause of the sickness. Originally, I bought into that. The crossing of the Balefire streams, it's a bad thing, and that was the cause of his sickness. But now I'm leaning more toward the fact that of the two wounds that have been sort of walled off and are fighting each other being at least part of the cause of his sickness. How's that for deviating from our topic?
Well, I mean, it kind of does, but at the same time, it does take us back, because I think we discussed that in the last episode as well, was that the idea that Rand's sickness might be the result of his connection to Morden. But you're right, Morden doesn't seem to get ill at any point in time. We know he's got non-phantom-phantom hand syndrome from the loss of Rand's hand, but yeah, I don't know.
Well put. I haven't ever heard it called quite that, but that pretty much sums it up, yeah.
Or you know, pseudo-phantom hand syndrome.
You know, Rand's sickness could still be caused by the strange connection between Rand and Morden, but it's actually because Morden uses the true power, and not just because they're connected. I just always kind of see the taint as the true power. I don't see anything else that it could be. This is way off on a tangent that has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about. I don't know. I'm not even sure why I think that. I'm having problems right now trying to crystallize my thoughts and focalize them.
I do, something you did mention there, though, in the Gathering Storm, when Rand does seize the true power, as opposed to Sidon, I don't remember there being any mention of any sickness. I mean, it might actually be the case that because Morden doesn't use Sidon anymore, that he isn't feeling the effects of this sickness, if the connection between him and Rand is what's causing it, because he only uses the true power. I really don't remember a moment when, while he was, you know, trying to use the true power, that he felt like he was going to be sick at all. But every time he touched Sidon in the book, he was, like, retching and falling off of things and stumbling, and everybody's all concerned about him. I don't know. That could be a possibility.
Well, and not only does Morden exclusively use the true power now, but he himself would be insulated from any effects of the taint on Sidon, previously the taint, before Rand cleansed it, because of the connection to the Dark One, which we've determined insulates them from the taint. But Rand doesn't have that protection, so...
And you know, that leads us right back into Omar's voicemail, because there was a point in there that I know we haven't touched on. Oh, he's talking, he said that he agreed that the Black Cords Rand did witness connecting the male Forsaken to the Dark One were the filter or the firewall, for lack of a better word, for the Forsaken against the taint.
I remember making that analogy where the reason it was black is because you were seeing the taint around the quote-unquote cord of Sidon, which when Rand was touching the amount of Sidon at the Eye of the World, it was a brilliant white cord that was flowing into him. And, you know, I could just imagine that taint kind of coating it over top of it with the darkness of the Dark One. And yeah, it occurred to me a little after we had that discussion that Rand does cut Ishamael's cord as well, but when you really look at it, Ishamael was so crazy to begin with. I mean, what would it really matter if any of the Dark One's taint got into him at all? I mean, it didn't seem to affect Asmodian too much when that particular cord was severed, so who knows?
No, but Asmodian wasn't really able to touch the power that much either. He was sort of, the shield was preventing him from touching more than a trickle, so that might have been why it didn't affect him more.
There's that. And then also, Asmodian didn't have an opportunity to go back to Sheol Ghul and renew whatever black vows he's made to the Dark One after Rand left Ishamael in that strange room. After Rand left Ishamael and he had cut the cord, Ishamael had plenty of time to go back and renew whatever vows and get reconnected with the Dark One. Asmodian never had that chance.
True.
But I do think you're right. He's too crazy for it to matter.
Yeah, pretty much. I think everybody would agree with that. But on the other hand, he's kind of crazy like a fox, too, so it may not really make that much difference in his effectiveness.
So I think that fairly well wraps up Omar's voicemail. Thank you again for the voicemail. And if we missed anything, you know, don't hesitate to let us know. I'm sure we will revisit voicemails again, as we tend to revisit a lot of topics on the podcast. Our next listener voicemail comes to us from Keith, and it is concerning sealing the bore.
Hello, Fourth Age Podcast. This is Keith Norman from Henderson, Kentucky. I've just finished Gathering Storm. Awesome job by Brandon Sanderson. A few spots I could kind of tell. It was a difference between him and Robert Jordan, but overall, a very masterful job. And I just listened to y'all's podcast, and I had a crazy theory I would like to let you know about. And it has to do with the sealing of the Dark One's prison and how Luce Theron said that he would have to break down all the seals and start over. And it's a big controversy whether if a female Aes Sedai would have used Sadar, whether they would have been tainted as well. And I believe that they would have been, and they will be, if they try to seal the Dark One again. And I think the whole key is Rand using the true power that he gets through his link, I guess, with Moradin, and will use the true power to seal away the Dark One. You know, what irony to use the Dark One's power against himself. Who knows? He may be completely wrong, but I just thought I'd call in and let you guys hear that. All right, thank you.
Oh, thanks, Keith. That's a great voicemail. A lot to go on there. I would have to say at the beginning that as far as sealing the bore, wouldn't it be cool if somehow Rand could figure out a way that they could use the true power, Sidene and Sidar, all mixed together, sort of the way he did the cleansing of the taint from Sidene, you know, by channeling together with other people, each using a separate stream of their own version of the power. Then maybe nobody'd have to get tainted.
I don't see anything that Rand could do being effective in sealing the Dark One. I personally don't think that you can seal the Dark One with the Dark One's power. It seems a conflict of interest to me. I have always seen the sealing away of the Dark One as more of something that's natural and will happen as soon as nothing is in the way. The thing is, to get nothing in the way, you'd have to push the Dark One back out of the way. And I think that's where the true power might come in handy. I don't see it being used to actually recreate the seal that Luce Theron and Telamon put on there. I don't think that that's going to be the answer. It's like patching a hole in a ship, except your ship's made out of stone.
Well, but the Dark One is sealed away in a prison that the Creator made, right? And then they just drill the bore into it in the Age of Legends. Well, if they break all the seals, then the bore is opened, but is there a way they can destroy the Dark One's prison altogether and then have it somehow remade without direct intervention of the Creator? But why couldn't that happen? The Creator did it once. Why can't he just make another one? I know, ceiling cat, no interfere. I get it.
No. You kind of understand how I think, and to understand and what I believe about the Wheel of Time universe, to understand my thought process here. And I believe that they don't understand properly how the Dark One is touching their world. I personally don't see it as the Dark One was locked in a prison and Merrin opened it. I see it more as this world was put into a secluded spot, a protected bubble that you're not supposed to be able to get through. And Merrin poked a hole in it, and then the Dark One was waiting when that hole was poked to get right in there. And so to me, in order to get the Dark One back out, you're going to have to push him out of the way, and then the bubble will seal itself.
Hmm.
By that logic, this is something that just kind of occurred to me. If you're right about that, then during the creation of things, is it possible then that the Creator not only sealed the Dark One outside of the world, but sealed itself out as well? Which is why the Creator doesn't take a hand in things, because the Creator, being somewhat more passive than the Dark One, is also sitting outside of what we think of as the world bubble.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, that's another kind of point that I assume is correct, and so it's gospel to me. Because in order for the creator to get into the bubble to influence the world, it would weaken the structural integrity of the bubble even more. However, that doesn't explain the voice that Rand heard in the end of Eye of the World.
Some people have theorized that that was not the creator, but I don't know who it might have been. Perhaps one of the Forsaken trying to play games? I don't know. One thing I do know is that the catechism that they all recite in Rand's age is wrong, where they say that the Dark One and all the Forsaken were sealed away by the Creator at the moment of creation. We know that's wrong, because otherwise how would they have been the Forsaken and running around doing all the things they did if they were sealed away at the moment of creation? Baloney. Didn't happen.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I base my assumptions on, is that the way that RJ has written his characters, they don't fully understand the universe that they're living in, and so we can't trust their assumptions to make our own. Except maybe to look at them and say, well, we know that's not right, but maybe this little bit is, maybe that little bit is. But, you know, there's just a lot of this where they're way off in their assumptions, and we, the reader, know this, having more information than they do. I mean, we had access to the Creator for many years, and now we have, I guess, the next best thing.
As to Keith's voicemail, I'm not certain that the boar can be sealed using the true power, partially because if I'm following my earlier logic and calling the Dark One essentially the incarnation of entropy, the idea of using a purely corruptive and destructive force to mix a hole in what is essentially reality, it seems like, oh, well, there's a fire over there. Let's throw some grease on it to put it out.
Well, if you have a big enough bucket of grease, maybe not.
Yes, I understand. With a large enough bucket of gasoline, you can still put a fire out with it.
That's interesting. Maybe not. Maybe yes. I haven't tried it. Don't plan to.
I value I guess my eyebrows and body fur. Thank you much.
I guess it all goes down to whether we believe that the true source is actually 100% corrupted and evil, or if it only has that effect on the evil people that are using it. I mean, is the true source like Sidon and Sidar, in that it is a pure source and only the uses to which it is put are good or evil? Or is it, perhaps something that is effectively tainted for the followers of the Dark One because of what the Dark One's doing to it? And maybe not in and of itself evil. It always has bothered me that there would be a force for good that's divided into the male and the female halves, but yet the evil guys can use it just as well as the good guys. And then there's the true power, which is not divided, but can only be used by pretty much the bad guys, except for Rand at this point in time, and we only think that he can use it because of his link with the bad guy. So it just kind of doesn't seem balanced to me, and it seems to me that in the physical world, forces are always equally balanced. There just has to be. You just don't have one force in one direction without an equal and opposite force. It doesn't really happen. And Robert Jordan did have a grounding in physics, so I'm sure that he would have been operating under the same basic consistent laws of physics, even though they're different in this worldview. They're still consistent. So I think that there's got to be either something else we don't know about the true source, or there's another equal and opposite to the true source that we have not yet seen.
First of all, I kind of think that the fact that the access to the true power goes through the Dark One kind of says, yes, it is evil. And as to your other point that they're not really in balance, I think they are. Because the Creator is a force of good, but being a force of good, he's also a force of choice. And you're allowed to choose to be good or to be bad. And it's all about your free choice and your ability to choose, which is what the Dark One is trying to get rid of. He doesn't want you to be able to choose either way. He won't just want you to die, whereas the Creator wants you to live free. Even the Forsaken don't really want you to live free. They want you to live in bondage to them. And so I think the ability that the power of the light is still the power of the light, even if it can be used by either side. Whereas the power of the dark, Varen says it, they're much more selfish on that side, that you're only allowed to have so much because I want to have more of it. To me, that clears up the issue of balance between the two.
Well, I absolutely agree with you on a philosophical level. I have no quarrel with any of that, but on a straight forces of nature physical level, I have to disagree because a power that can be... I mean, forces of nature, which we have to assume that the one power and the true power are, generally not subject to philosophical restrictions. In other words, the force of gravity is the force of gravity for everybody, whether you're good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, you may be able to, you know, come across certain mechanical means of circumventing it, like building an airplane, but again, it's all within the laws of physics of that particular world. But there are no forces in nature that can be used by a good guy and not by a bad guy or vice versa. They generally come in pairs. You know, in quantum physics, you know, you have a weak force and a strong force. There are all these sort of paired. It doesn't make sense to me that there is a physical force that can be used only by the good guys and another physical force which seems to be roughly similar to it, which can be used by anybody if they have the proper physiological equipment to channel it. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm making too much out of this, and I'll just shut up about it. I beat this horse a lot, and I guess maybe it's... Nobody seems to be really too in much in agreement with me, so maybe I'll just let it go for a while.
Well, the thing is, it could very well be a natural force, but there's someone who's holding it back, who's powerful enough to hold it back. We've seen that either side can use it. Rand can use... Whichever he can use whichever one it is. Either side can use it. It's just that there's someone who's so powerful blocking one side from using it. It's no different from if suddenly someone had enough power and they decided no one gets to have oil unless I let them. Unless they come to me groveling on their knees and I decide to that they get this oil. Whereas, you know, there are other things like air that currently there's no one powerful enough to say you can't use air unless I want you to. But if there was someone powerful enough, they could certainly restrict that.
But I've always assumed, not always, since the Gathering Storm, I've assumed that the only reason that Rand was able to touch it was because of his link with Morden, which allows him to touch the true source because Morden can. And it doesn't appear to me that anybody else among the good guys has ever or is ever likely to be able to touch the true source anytime soon.
Well, the thing is, the Dark One is still sitting there keeping people from touching it. It's either because the Dark One wanted Rand to touch it or because the Dark One allows Morden to touch it and Rand has some weird connection to him that he can get through the gate to touch it. I don't think the ability to channel the true source has anything to do with the permission to touch the true source. I think there are two completely different things. And so the ability to channel something does not allow you the permission to touch it when there's someone who's keeping you from doing so. And I'm not even sure that anyone would want to touch it if they were completely sane, because it's not something one wants to touch. We've seen what it did to Ishamael, what it's doing to Moradin, what it's doing to Rand, even. We've seen that it's not a clean thing, and it could very easily be the balance to balance the Sedar and Sedin, the one power.
If it's merely a fact of the Dark One's not allowing people to touch it, and because of that there are consequences to using it, such as the Saw and certain other things which are supposed to be horrific but are never specifically named, you would think that there would be some people who were channelers, who would touch the true source just by accident, you know, kind of experimenting around and so forth and having horrific consequences or dropping dead periodically just because they inadvertently touched it. I mean, it doesn't ever say that the Dark One has made it impossible for anybody to touch. It's just that the cost is too high because he's forbidden it. I know Mogedion reflects on that several times. Only so many people have been given permission. It doesn't ever say that it can't be touched without permission, just that there are serious consequences. So you'd think some people would be doing it by accident.
Well, and there's a couple different points while I've been listening here that I'd like to go with. I do remember, yes, that Mogedion does reflect that someone would have to be, you know, truly crazy to attempt to touch the true power without the Dark One's permission. She does seem to make a case that it's possible to use it. Something in the reflection actually even seemed to say that any of the Forsaken could touch it if they really wanted to, but that you'd be a fool to do it, and you'd definitely be a fool to do it without the Dark One's direct permission, especially now that there is a Nameless. As far as the balance issue, I actually come down on the side that there is a force to balance the true power that we don't see. And it's reinforced for me when Luce Thurin has his reaction to Rand grabbing the true power. He doesn't say that's his, or the exact words he uses when Rand first grabs a hold of it is it's him. And the way I see it is that the Dark One himself is the true power. The Dark One isn't so much a physical entity as is a force of existence in this world. And thereby, if you are channeling him, is what's using the true power. And that there has to be, in this case, in this philosophy, a equivalency in the creator who would be a completely opposite force of existence, which could also technically, if accessible, balance against the true power, because they also seem to make mention that the true power seems to be stronger than the one power. It doesn't have the one power's restriction over you have to be one sex or the other to wield whatever part of it. You know, anybody can use it. So it seems to me that there would be three different, essentially, sources. The source that is the creator, the source that is the Dark One, and then the one power, which was designed to be the balance between the two of them and half only accessible to each sex, and, you know, being in balance with each other, where the two greater powers balance each other in the same way.
I like that, and it seems to me that the one power was actually described as the force that drove the universe. So maybe it is sort of a lesser adjunct to the two superior powers that are highly aligned with the Evil One and the Creator. And another thought that just occurred to me is, if that's true, does that mean that there are no Angreal or Tarangreal or Saangreal that channel the true power? And the way I got to that was, when you first started saying that, I thought, oh, okay, if there's an undiscovered power, which I think there may be, then maybe that was the unknown Tarangreal that the girls were looking for to help the Dragon Reborn that they couldn't get to because it was in the White Tower and ended up finding the Bowl of the Winds instead. Maybe it channeled that one power of the Creator, or the true power of the Creator. But then that led to the thing, well, are there no objects of the power for the true power, or the true source?
You know, I like that too, but I have to wonder, if that's true, then what did Brandon think when he read through all of RJ's notes and realized that it's practically the same thing as his ruin and preservation that he has in Mistborn?
I kind of thought on that myself. The oddness of the true power being essentially hemallergy and the use of ruin and allomancy being the unknown creator power and being of preservation. And of course, that would make the one power the art of Faruqami.
Well, you know, they say there's not that much new under the sun. It's just different ways to describe it.
And then Rand is the hero of ages. He gets them both.
He gets to die.
Yeah, if we are correct, and there is something like that, then hopefully, once the series is finished, we'll have Brandon back on the podcast, and we'll get to ask him and see what his reactions were. You know, maybe we'll be wrong, and the question will never come up. But if it's not, or if we're right, then you know, I definitely would like to get Brandon's response to that.
Well, I don't really want it to end like Mistborn. I don't want everybody to die in the end.
Well, the thing is, Rand's already on his way to channeling. He can channel two of them. If we assume there's a third, then it's only like a hop, skip, and a jump to channeling all three, and then he can just destroy the Dark One and the Creator and take over.
Creepy notion that follows this line. He will hold the Sword of Light in his hand, and the three will become one.
Ooh, okay, well that kind of goes with what I was thinking earlier, that if there's somebody to channel the true power and somebody to channel the one power, even if it's a man and a woman linked, and then there's a third person to channel the as yet unknown power, then he linked together with these person or persons unknown would be invincible.
You know, it almost works except for one thing. Rand can only channel Sadine. He'd need someone who could channel Sadar. So unless this merging that Min sees is between him and a female, or him and someone who can channel Sadar, then this just won't work.
The thing is that if he's using Kalendor as a Saangriel, then to use it correctly, he needs to be linked with two women, as a matter of fact. So it's possible, I mean, I don't know exactly how, but it's definitely possible that, you know, doing so, being linked to use Kalendor, gives him access to both, you know, Sidar and Sadin.
Well, I was sort of thinking a little bit more complicated than that, and what made me think of it is that if, when Cabriana Mercandus was captured, and Semirog was reflecting that the Murdral always brought along the Warder because, in their eyes, the Warder linked to the Aes Sedai were one. Then, following that train of logic, that if Rand was linked with two women to wield Kalendor, or perhaps Jahar, he who comes after, was linked with Kalendor and two women, that would function as essentially one unit. Then Rand would be able to channel the true power, presumably, if he can still do it, and then hopefully there would be some as yet unknown person or persons who would be able to bring in the unknown equivalent of the true power, and if those people all linked, I would think there wouldn't be anything they couldn't do at that point. That might be just too much power for the book, but I don't know how else he's going to defeat the Dark One, who seems to be so infinitely stronger than the forces of light all this time.
He's going to create a feedback loop using the true power. So, if we assume that Rand's using Kalendor, then we have a job for Elaine, we have a job for Avienda. What is Min going to do?
Sit there and worry, I guess. I don't think Rand's going to use Kalendor. I think it's going to be Jahar Nerishma. Because he's the one who got it, he's the one who's had it all this time. I think it's still in Cadswain's possession at this point. And he's been clearly identified as the one who comes after shall hold the sword shining too brightly to see, etc., etc.
Well, yeah, Rand's going to have this third unknown Saangriel that he's going to be using. But maybe he'll have similar restrictions.
I don't know, but maybe, you know, in other words, if you can, I guess the next question is, can you form a link with a different but similar existing link? In other words, can you bring three linked people into a larger superior link with one of these other powers? And this is all going pretty far afield, but I mean, if we're going to get into theoretical physics of the Wheel of Time and the One Power, you know, let's just do it.
You see, Keith, you ask us a very, very simple question, and look at all the possibilities that you've brought up as a result. Honestly, this was a totally awesome discussion sparked by, you know, a voicemail that, you know, yes, we went we went clearly onto a tangent, but I think the discussion we got out of the voicemail was very good, even if we didn't come to any solid conclusion on whether or not Rand could use the true power to end up sealing the board. So, yeah, thanks again for that, and I think we will move on to the next voicemail.
And the only thing I have to say about that is, I's in your quantum box, fooling with your powers.
All right. Before we go into the next one, I want to mention a couple of things. The first is, I'm not 100% sure what the labels are referring to for each of these. So, sometimes they'll actually fit with what the voicemail is, sometimes they won't. The second is, the names are just our best guess based on the kind of low-quality messages that we've received. Voice over phone sound quality goes down a lot. And so if we get your name wrong, we are eternally sorry and in your debt, and you're welcome to call us back up and rip us a new one. So anyway, our next voicemail is from Brian, and it's discussing Rand's parentage.
Hi, this is Brian Holman from Utah. Yeah, big fan, and I love your podcast. Just really enjoying listening to them. I came up with a question that I just don't know the books as well as you guys do, and I thought you could help me out. I am wondering, who is it that is aware of Rand's parentage? Who are the people that know that? Is Rand himself aware of that? If you could just please expound on that, and we'll answer that on a future podcast, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Let's see, this is actually kind of an easy one. First of all, yes, I'm pretty sure Rand does know who his parents are, because when he was with the Aiel, they talked about who his mother was, who his father was, that his mother was a wetlander that came over and became a maiden of the spear. And then when he went into Camelin, after he purged out Ravin, they talked about how he looked so much like Tigraine and just about the connection there. I'm pretty sure he does know. I'm not sure if anyone else realizes that he's descended from Andoran royalty. I don't know. What do you guys...
Well, I think that Dylan has a suspicion that he may be descended from Tigraine. Elida obviously got it extremely wrong when she had the foretelling that said the royal house of Andor would be the key to defeating the Dark One in the last battle. I honestly think that actually referred to Rand and not to Elaine's house of Trakand. I'm not certain. I think Moraine might have part of the puzzle. I don't think she has it all. It really depends on if the foretellings of Giatara Morosa happened to get any further, or if she kept them to herself and whoever happened to witness them. Other than that, I don't think anyone else of significance knows. I think, like I said, there are a couple of people who probably have suspicions, and I assume, of course, that the Wise One should know Rand's parentage, just because they were there up until the point that Shael, Tigraine, came back over the Dragon Wall to give birth on the slips of Dragonmount. I'm fairly certain that they would have to know who Rand's parents were, too. And, you know, what import that could give, I don't know.
Didn't the Aiel Wise Ones even tell Egwene that was Rand's story to tell if they wished, and they knew what his parentage was? I don't know if they connected Tigraine to the Royal House of Andor. They didn't really know, I don't think, where she came from.
Weren't the Wise Ones the ones who told Rand who his parents were? Or was that someone else? I'll confess, I haven't done a reread of those books in a long time.
It was either the Wise Ones or the Maidens who end up giving the story of Shael to, I want to say, Rand. And it was just more of this is kind of how it happened. We don't know anything else except that here's this, you know, the first son of a maiden to actually come back to us, kind of thing.
Well, and the Wise Ones knew that his father was Janduin, and they told the whole story to him about how he was a clan chief and how he couldn't deny Shail anything, and that's why he allowed her to go, you know, on the raid against Laman, even though she was with child and they knew it, and they weren't supposed to allow, anyone with child wasn't supposed to go out into battle, but he couldn't deny her anything, and so she did, and then she was lost.
And on the Encyclopedia Watt, on Tigraine's actual page, it says that a mist tells Rans the story of his parent. So it's kind of a wise one and a maiden of the spear.
And a lot of people have bits and pieces of it, but who really has the whole story besides Rand himself?
Honestly, I don't think anyone other than Rand has the whole story.
What about Ashamiel? You know, he told him, you know, in that dream, he told him parts of it. I wonder how much he really, really knows. Or was some of it just, you know, speculation to drive Rand crazy because he knew Rand didn't know?
Well, you know, I think that the Dark One knows, and through him he would tell Ishamael Moradin and
Shadar Haran.
He would tell Moradin and Shadar Haran, and so they would know. But I'm not sure if they what they could do with the knowledge, but I'm also not 100% sure that they do have it. Most likely they do, but that's not a definitely.
Okay, I can live with that.
All right, so our next voicemail comes to us from Dale, and it concerns the Finns and death.
Hey guys, this is Dale in Dallas. Well, I'm just listening to your podcast on Knife of Dreams, chapters 7 through 9, and doing a great job, by the way, but it got me to thinking about the whole thing with Matt and the Finns, about how they seem to feed off of the sensations of the memories, or of what Matt's feeling after going through there, I accept, you know, that that's what they like. But my question is, if that's what they are seeking, if that's what they're after when from these people that come visit them, why are they so quick to try and kill somebody when they don't set the price for leaving the world of the Fens? You know, why were they trying to hang Matt when, obviously, if he died, then they wouldn't be able to get any of those sensations from him? Just wondering what you thought. Thanks a lot, and keep up the great work.
Okay, this theory is my baby, so I'm going to defend it really quick. I think I'm going to throw out a lot of assumptions that I've made here. These are not proven by any stretch of the imagination. They're just what I believe to be true. And so I assume, I remember when we talked about this, I assumed that the reason that the Finn have bugged Matt or whatever it is, that they're spying on him and collecting his memories, is because that's what they feed on, or that's how they gain nourishment or something, or that's their form of entertainment. They don't really have lives. They sit in these towers their whole life. And let me add on to that, I'm not entirely sure that they can die. Well, maybe if they're attacked, but not of old age. They seem to me to have the feel of someone who is immortal, especially when we meet them in Shadow Rising. And these are obviously those who have... Okay, it's not obvious. To me, it appears to be that these are the same ones who have been there for centuries. And these doorways haven't been used in a long time. These are the same ones who have been there. They've been waiting for hundreds of generations, to my mind. So I'm not entirely sure they can die. So to me, it would be like, you want to get the memories, the sensations of a person dying, because that's not something you're ever going to get to feel firsthand. And so you want to feel it as much as you can secondhand, just because it's such a novelty. I hope that makes some bit of sense.
To add to that theory, supposing that you are correct, I personally do also agree that the Finns are somewhat like the Faerie of myth, where, you know, they are off in their own world where time doesn't exactly happen the same way, and I do agree that these Finns are probably the same Finns that have met previous travelers coming into their realm. In that particular case, the memories that they have siphoned off previous people who have visited them have to be akin to the idea of you're locked in a room with a TV, a DVD player, and 12 DVDs. How long can you watch those same 12 DVDs, even including the bonus footage and extra interviews and all sorts of other things that come on DVDs now, before you go completely stark raving mad and need more CDs or more DVDs? You know, I think Matt being or coming in was definitely a source. As to why they would be so quick to kill him, I actually have a little pet theory that because they are tied to the Eelfin, the Eelfin also might have the ability to sort of read the pattern and know that Matt wasn't going to die via the hanging. They might have known that he was going to be saved from you know, strangulation, and therefore did it just because they are alien to our world. The way they think is not the way we think, and therefore it is very possible that they did it for their own reasons that we just can't understand. I mean, it might even just be a twisted sense of amusement, you know, because, you know, the first thing Matt does say about the spear when he looks at the writing in the old tongue along the haft is, you know, it's their idea of a joke. So I think that we kind of have to, at least for Matt, chalk it up to their sense of thought is just not what ours is, and therefore I don't know that we can understand why they would do that. As for anyone else, I don't know. Maybe there's just a bit of them that is more primal and savage and has that kind of killing instinct that, you know, that we don't understand.
Well, I like that. I think that, but either the Fin are virtually immortal, or they have an extremely well-developed racial memory to where they all basically remember everything, sort of like the Borg collective, I guess. But, and the other thing that struck me as you were saying that is if you're going to experience death, experiencing it secondhand is definitely a better way to do it than firsthand. But, you know, you're right. Those guys don't even have cable or anything. They've got to be really bored when nobody shows up, you know?
I mean, it was kind of like, you know, just the idea of some of the first words that were spoken to them were, you know, so long, so long. You know, it's been such a long time since anyone has gone to either of them that, you know, they do. They have to be going totally gaga.
Well, and it's been longer for the Fox people, whichever ones those are. The ones that were locked in Ruhidian, because the others, names for that are really close together confuse me the whole time. The only reason I remember Sadar and Sadine and which ones they go to is the one that sounds like it should be for the women is for the men.
It's the same with the Eelfin and the Eelfin. The ones that look like snakes are not the eels.
See, I'm lucky if I remember that it's an eel and an ale.
Well, if you have enough ale, it becomes really obvious, okay?
That it will be a merging of races. And it won't be the Eelfin, it'll be the Eelfin.
Oh my God, that's too much.
That
yeah, Eelfin, that's almost too scary for words, Andrew. That really is.
I cannot imagine.
And then they will merge with horses, and there will be an Eelfindar.
Now you've gone over the edge.
Well, as long as I'm in a bronze rocket ship heading for New Worlds.
Someone cut off the supply of happy gas that's running into Andrew's room.
Okay, back to the discussion.
Well, we know that it's been a longer time for the there I go again. We know it's been a longer time for the Fox people because they were locked in Ruhidian, whereas the others were used often by the First of Mayeni before the doorway got given to Tyr and locked in a storeroom.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. The only other access port, of course, that we know of being the Tower of Genji, which hopefully will be arriving at some point during the Towers of Midnight and not early in A Memory of Light.
I sure hope so. I'm really waiting for that one. Otherwise, I'm going to start getting like the Eelfin and the Eelfin. I'm going to be going around going, bored now. And you know what happens when someone says that.
Tell me, Andrew, were your teeth gritted when you said that last one? Because it sure sounded like it.
Oh, no. That was me doing a soft, quick aside that was supposed to be hint-hintish. As our final voicemail of the evening comes to us from an anonymous listener, and she just had a quick comment to post to us about the sound quality here at the Fourth Age.
Hi, I hope I am reaching the voicemail for the Fourth Age podcast. I just want to say that I am a few episodes behind, but I am currently listening to your interview with Jason from Dragon Mount, and I want to say thank you so much for fixing the sound quality. I can actually understand you guys, and I love your show so much. So while I found it somewhat frustrating in the past to try and understand you, this is perfect, and the clarity is fantastic. Whatever you are doing, keep it up, and thank you all for your time and effort that you put into the show. I really do enjoy it. Thank you. Bye.
And by that point, I believe that Spencer had taken over as our chief editor for the Fourth Age. So, Spencer, kudos from the listening audience.
Oh, now you're making me blush.
Well, it's radio, so it's okay. But she's right, you know. We definitely did see a real uptick in the sound quality when you took over, and we thank you for that. And we also thank you for joining us talking, too. I felt like I twisted your arm to do it the first time, but you've been a real asset to the show, so thank you. It's Spencer Appreciation Day!
There was no arm twisting involved. There was much jumping up and down and squealing with joy when you sent me the email that said, "Hey, by the way, would you like to join us to record tonight?" Yes. Yes, I would.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad, because I kind of felt like I twisted your arm a little.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate having you on, both for commentary and for the very superb work that you've done in the editing. And we definitely are always here at the podcast trying to find ways to make the show run smoother and to sound better for those who do listen to us. It is a lot of work that a lot of people don't see behind the scenes on getting one of these things done, and any help that we can get is always very, very appreciated. That being said, if you have any comments, anything that, you know, sparked an idea and anything you've heard tonight, any, you know, criticisms or encouragement, we will listen to or read pretty much anything you guys send us and try to respond as soon as possible. If you would like to leave us a voicemail that could possibly get used in a future episode, you can always call us and leave us a message at 1-888-333-7690.
And you can also follow us on some of the various social media pages. We have a Facebook fan page. You can follow us on Twitter at Fourth Age. On Facebook, we are Fourth Age Podcast, and also Dragon Mount, our host and sponsor, has both a Twitter account and a Facebook page as well under Dragon Mount.
Also, and probably the best way to get a hold of us is to email us. That email is podcast@dragonmount.com. There are several of us that get that email, and depending on how close we are to our email source, you can get a reply within minutes. You will get a reply within a day, usually.
There are very rare occasions where it takes longer than that, but very seldom do we not respond, usually within 24 hours. Also, if you would like, after each individual podcast that's posted on dragonmount.com, there is a section for comments, and a lot of us will hop in from time to time, read through those comments, and continue our discussions afterwards. In addition, dragonmount.com also has a forum page for the Fourth Age, which is located at www.dragonmount.com/forums.
If you can channel, drop by anytime. I'll be happy to learn what I can from you.
Don't cut her dogs in half.
Yeah, dogs. Dogs are good.
I said I would find it comfortable at my house, as I have cats.
Yes, that's true. Even cats named after Forsaken.
Who were originally Aes Sedai.
Who were originally cats named after Forsaken.
Well, we've had a lot of interesting conversation tonight. Most of it stimulating, some of it not so much. All of it interesting and good, and it's always, I always enjoy coming and talking with you, Virginia, and you, Andrew. It's not like a recording session. It's more like a few friends getting together and talking about it. Until the next time, may you all find water and shade.
And I have to say that this is also a belated official Andrew Appreciation Day too. Andrew, I can't tell you how glad I am that you've stuck with it this long despite all of the trials and tribulations and misplaced jocularity and who knows what all, but thank you, Andrew. thank you for being here.
Well, that's not a problem. I really do enjoy getting together and discussing this work that we all enjoy so much. I also find it is definitely good practice in actual just being able to discuss literature in general, but to get inside, you know, the mindset of the fictional characters, because it's really interesting at what you can come up with and what that actually says about people in general, based on the things that we read and, you know, the things that are written for us. So I definitely enjoy coming and doing the podcast. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Well, I enjoy doing it greatly too, and I'm just, you know, having a ball with this. I'm glad that people seem to be enjoying it as much as we are, because we do have a lot of fun, and, you know, this whole book series has given us so much pleasure over the years and so much stimulation mentally. It's great, and I'm glad that there are people who actually care about it enough to listen to us talk about it, and hopefully we'll have this pleasure for another couple of years until Brandon finally wraps it all up. And you know what? It may even go on after that, because goodness knows they're still talking about The Lord of the Rings, and that's been decades. In the meantime, I will say goodbye, and this is Virginia saying thank you again for listening, and may the light illumine you until we meet again.
And for myself, Andrew Gellos, and everyone here at the Fourth Age, Serafian Into Manchima, Taishite.
I still didn't get my one tongue, you know, old tongue way to say walk in the light either. He promised. We have it on tape.
You do?
Yeah, well, he sort of promised. He implied. One of those sneaky Aes Sedai things, I think. He didn't really say he was gonna, but he certainly left me with the impression that he would. I guess I have to watch him every second now.